Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
Time now for the DenverFan.com front page.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
Taking a look at the top stories in Denver sports taken from your online home for the best opinions and information on the Broncos, Nuggets, Avalanche, Rockies, and more.
What in the name of Dan Issel?
With today's DenverFan.com front page, here's Schlereth and Evans.
News team, assist!
Andrew Mason was in Las Vegas, and as part of his coverage, he writes at DenverFan.com how the Broncos' loss in Vegas felt like the Fangio era, except for one thing. So here's where it felt hauntingly familiar. Josh Jacobs trampling the Broncos and the miscues, the self-inflicted wounds that Nathaniel Hackett says has been plaguing this team, all on display. Even the fumble by Melvin Gordon, again, something we've seen before. The inability to make a big stand on defense after they had scored the touchdown to make it 25-23. Come on, defense, give us a stand. Get the ball back to Russell Wilson. Couldn't do it. Raiders go down and score. So, Mace says it felt a lot like Fangio, except for one big thing. In Mace's opinion, hey, Russell Wilson seems to be getting better and better. With all the focus on Melvin Gordon today, where are you at right now with the evolution of this offense? Are you encouraged at all?
I'm encouraged that Russell Wilson, I think, was 11 of 12 in the first half.
Yep.
I'm encouraged that Russell Wilson was able to get his wide receivers, other guys, other not named Cortland Sutton, involved in the first half. I'm impressed with the fact that Russell Wilson went out there and threw two touchdowns. So I look at things like that. It looks like the red area woes, those things are a time of the past. But at the same time, I think everything around Russell Wilson, there's real problems around Russell Wilson. And there's only so much that you could ask your quarterback to do.
Such as?
Offensive line. The right side of this line particularly. It is bad. Like Graham Glasgow showed you why the Broncos asked him to take a pay cut. And showed you why he willingly took that pay cut and did not say, the heck with that, you know, let me go be a free agent. Somebody else will pick me up. Cam Fleming shows you why he was out there on the streets when training camp started. So
What's going on with Billy Turner? The mystery man.
Yeah, mystery man, not ready yet.
Not mentally ready? Emotionally ready?
I think with Billy Turner, if you're... The real tell is going to be next week when the Broncos play the Chargers on Monday Night Football, because now you get a unique opportunity to play Thursday. You get some extra practice days. You don't play the following Sunday. If there's ever going to be a sighting of Billy Turner, it would be next week.
All right, so you're still going to have big right side issues this week.
Yes.
Bolesy,
yes.
A couple of holding calls.
Bolesy, holding calls. The scheme, I don't think Nathaniel Hackett truly understands his personnel on offense. I don't think he's putting this offense in the best position to succeed. You ran a stutter pass on Crosby's second sack where you're asking Andrew Beck to go block him. That's the best player on that defense for the Las Vegas Raiders. I don't know why you would put your fullback on him and now ask Graham Glasgow to pull and block Cam Chancellor off the edge on the other side. It's just a bad scheme running a stutter pass.
All right, so you feel better about Russell Wilson, but you're really down on everything around him.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Will Peterson writes about the good, the bad, the ugly. The good, Russell Wilson cooked. The bad, the Denver defense was bad after being excellent the first three games of the season, and the ugly Melvin Gordon stinks. All right, we've spent our time with Melvin Gordon. What about the defense? Boy, the defense better be thankful for what's going on with Melvin Gordon, because they're allowed to skate a little bit. They were bad. I mean, they were bad. I mean, when you give up 25 first downs, 7 of 14 on third down, you're out there for 74 plays. They just, you give up 212 yards rushing. I mean, that's just a mano a mano, here we come, can you stop us? And they couldn't stop. I mean, that's got to be as an offensive lineman, I know you love those games when you were running the ball so effectively that the defense knew it was coming and they still couldn't stop you.
Yeah.
What a demoralizing feeling that must be.
Yeah. Just looking at this defense, Mike, they were bullied yesterday.
Bullied.
You would think that this defense was, and that's why you knew that this game wasn't going to go well early, even though it was close. I watched the defense just play after play where the Raiders said, you know what, the heck with you. You're just too small, or you're just not gifted enough. And, you know, watch the type of runs that the Raiders did. They said, we're going downhill. There's none of this. We're not trying to get cute. We're going to get Josh Jacobs, and we're going to put a fullback in front of him. We're going to lead up, and we're going to say, come make a tackle. I watch guys get pushed around in the run game. I watch linebackers have no idea where the ball was at. I watch the gap integrity of this defense really suffer. And then I watch guys get pushed around. Did you see the Josh Jacobs late touchdown? A big 71 for the Raiders just said, oh, Pat Surtain, go sit down somewhere, and just pushed him down. Where that's what type of day it was. And there wasn't nobody standing up saying, I'm ready to fight.
All right, so when Nathaniel Hackett comes out afterwards, and we've played the quote a couple of times, I don't know, Johnny, if you have it handy, in which he was asked about the Raiders' run game and the Broncos' difficulty in stopping it. Here's what he had to say, and pick out the parts that have me as upset. I'm sure you'll feel the same way.
Yeah, we knew when we went into this game, we were going to have to knock that run out early. And they do have a very good run game. I give them so much credit. They came out and had a really good plan. They stuck with it throughout the entire game. And, you know, when you run for the over 200 yards, it's going to be detrimental. I mean, they had a lot of plays. I thought they had a good plan. They didn't want to get into long down and distance for passing situations so we could rush the passer. And they tried to slow the whole pace down. And so I thought it was a really good plan by them.
Oh, Coach, listen, I don't want you, first of all, out there praising their plan, giving them credit for sticking with their plan, all the while there was no adjustment to the plan. And it was just, so what kind of adjustments could they have made? Or were there adjustments to be made?
I think that everyone showed you that he's a little scared. And that's the problem with this Las Vegas offense. We know that they could push the ball down the field. We know that they could force feed Devontae Adams. Pat Surtain allowed catches yesterday, right? Devontae Adams had success. But then you see Darren Waller, and now you know what he's been and how he's crushed the inside linebackers with the Broncos. And I think no matter what, this defense had to sit on their heels if they weren't able to generate pressure with the four guys. And that's where it gets interesting. You know, Nathaniel Hackett talks about, we knew the plan. You had to be able to stop the run and figure out how to generate pressure with only four rushers. Broncos never did that. So now with the Las Vegas Raiders were able to do whatever they wanted. Oh, yeah, we could turn around and hand the ball off, and we could run for 200. Oh, yeah, we're going to get a guy had to have a 100-yard receiving game on you. And, oh, by the way, we're going to expose these inside linebackers with wide receivers and tight ends. So when you look at this football team as far as the Las Vegas Raiders, yeah, the record suggested they were bad, but they have weapons offensively, and we saw that this football team lacks depth, and we really saw how much we miss a guy like Justin Simmons when he's not out there on the field yesterday.
James Merrillat writing at DenverFan.com about how Nathaniel Hackett and Russell Wilson failed their first Bronco-Raiders rivalry week. You had Nathaniel Hackett during the week talking about how, hey, it's tough to really hate anybody in this world. It takes up too much energy. It's another game. And then afterwards, here's the photo making its way around. There you go. There's Russell Wilson and Derek Carr smiling at midfield after the game, taking a picture doing the jersey swap. Mm. That bug you?
Jersey swap? No. Doesn't bug me. Russell Wilson, now you're in this division. You know, these are the quarterbacks you're going to play twice a year. My expectation, honestly, is that he's probably going to do that every single time he plays a quarterback for the first time in this division this year. Now, if we're doing that If we're sitting there, you know, the second time we play and you've already done the jersey swap, yeah, that bothers me. Russ is that guy. Every single week I see him at midfield and it's a smile and it's pictures and, you know, it's swapping jerseys or, you know, talking with the other teams. That's just how he's built. Other guys are different. You know, a guy like Virgil Green, you know, after a game, doesn't matter who's on the other sideline, Virgil Green, done. Like, hey, the game is over, win or loss. He is sprinting in the locker room, and he lets it be known. Like, it doesn't matter that we're friends. I'm just not shaking your hand after this game, and it doesn't matter if we've won or we've lost. This is just me. But what we see with Russell Wilson, that's him.
That's, and what you just described is more and more a rarity in sports. And I know that as fans, it's like, man, how can you do that? You know, I'm, as a Bronco fan, I'm ticked off right now that we just lost to the Raiders. And you're out there smiling and hugging. And, hey, look, I get it. I understand it. But you got to understand, it's a new world in sports. The fraternization is in. You see it after basketball games. Everybody's hugging. You know, everyone's gathering after games. There's no real hatred anymore in baseball. You don't see guys, you know, taking guys out in slides or throwing at them inside, going up headhunting. You just don't see it. It's hockey's the only time, but that's the nature of the sport. You play the game is over. You go down, you meet your goalie after the game, win or lose, and then you get off the ice. There's just, I don't know. You can get mad at it, or you can just understand that that's the way it is now.
Well, football's becoming harder and harder, a lot because of what happened in college football a couple years ago. It was already hard in the NFL to create these rivalries because guys are come in on a 1-year deal or guys get cut, and now your nucleus is not really there. But in college football now, when you have these NILs and, you know, a guy could go to a school and if he plays really well for a year, now he could transfer out. Well, now you have a lot of guys one and done. You're not there for 3 years or 4 years or maybe even a possible 5 years where you really create that hatred. And now it's over and over and you're playing them every single year. And now it's, we got to get up. You could have a football team 1 year go against somebody in college and 60% of that team is gone the following year. And now you have a bunch of new guys. So there is no real rivalry. In the NFL, it's the exact same thing. Guys get there, they sign. You have coaches that talk about not really, how could you spend that much energy hating people? You have a quarterback that's sitting there and he wants to take the pictures and things like that, where the rivalry, it's the fan base that's holding on to this rivalry. It's the former players like me that I know what that rivalry was like and playing in the black hole. And that's why I'm going to hold on to that rivalry. But when you watch the players, it's not there.
So anymore. Is it up to us as fans to understand why you guys, and I'm saying you guys, everybody, you know, why guys do what Russell Wilson's doing and other players do, where there is a lot of, you know, hugging and shaking hands and hanging out and fraternizing after games. Is it up to us to understand that that's the new way of doing things and we have to deal with it and get over it? Or is it up to the players to understand, come on, the fans who support you, the fans who make it possible to make the money you make and live the life that you live, they don't like this. They don't like the optics when you just lose a game to a rival like the Raiders and you're out there smiling at midfield doing jersey swaps.
What's more likely to happen? You millionaires are going to sit there and be like, oh, okay, you know, our fan base doesn't like us jersey swapping, but what about the guy that I went to college for 2 years with? What about the guy that, you know, I've known him and grinded with him?
But a lot of this stuff, and you see it after basketball games especially, more and more now, can you understand, now that you're done playing, can you understand why fans hate that and why the optics are so bad?
I'm there with this fan base.
Okay, good.
I hate the Las Vegas Raiders.
You hate that picture.
Yes, I don't love that picture, but I understand what's going on. And I'm going to sit there and say we're probably going to see that a time or two as
All right, so we need to understand that rather than Russell Wilson needing to understand that's a bad look.
Yes.
Okay.
Because when I fully expect him in 2 weeks, so when you play in a Monday Night Football against Justin Herbert, I fully expect that same pitcher to repair. Later on in the year, when he plays against Kansas City and plays against Patrick Mahomes, I'm pretty sure that pitcher is going to happen as well. The jersey swap, the smile, what doesn't matter what the score was, and, you know, the many, many pictures, because they have those high-tech cameras that just go, right? So there's going to be so many different pictures taken at the end of games. I fully expect that. Now, I don't agree with it, because I don't like the Raiders. I don't like the Chargers. Even though I played for the Chargers, I still don't like them. I still believe that there is a rivalry. You know, each and every rivalry is a little bit different in the AFC West. And it's unique playing against these teams. And that's coming from a guy that's played basically my entire career in the AFC West. But I do understand that in today's day and age, in today's NFL, that's what you see after every single game, and that's what's become acceptable.
Yeah, that's one of those things that I, as a fan, have just had to accept and understand and get over, really. It's not worth my energy to get all upset at this stuff, because I recognize it for what it is. And if they're not going to change, if they're not going to feel my pain, then why should I spend a whole lot of energy getting all upset about it if I know that this is just the way it is now in sports? And it's unlikely to change. There's still a few really intense team rivalries, personal rivalries out there that still remind us of old school. But let's face it, those are becoming few and far between. And by the way, the notion that the Bronco-Raider rivalry is a rivalry right now, it's only a rivalry when both teams are winning. Right now, the Broncos have lost 5 in a row to the Raiders. They're 1-7 against the Raiders in their last 8, 2-8 in their last 10, 4-10 in their last 14. And that's not a rivalry. That's an ass kicking.
Yeah, and having beat the Raiders at the Raiders Stadium, whether it's in, you know, the Black Hole,
right,
or Las Vegas since Peyton Manning walked out the door.
That's right. On the road, wherever that is, it's now 6 straight losses.
So there is no rivalry. There is no
rivalry. Excuse me.
Rivalry.
7 straight losses. Yes. Hard. 7 straight losses. You got to go back to October 11th, 2015. Last time the Broncos beat the Raiders on the road. It's not a rivalry.
This coach, the head coach, head ball coach, told you that it's basically not a rivalry last week. So it's unfortunate. And the fan base, that's why I sat there and said, this team lacks accountability from the top down. And I feel bad for the fan base, because they're the ones that suffer. You know, Nathaniel Hackett, it's on to Indianapolis. A lot of these guys now, it's on to Indianapolis. You probably are not even going to make corrections on this game, depending on which coach it is and how they want to do it, because you could easily take the approach, hey, today's your day off, guys. See you Tuesday.
Yep. Our senior Broncos writer at DenverFan.com, Andrew Mason, was in Las Vegas yesterday. He joins us now, presented by Twin Peaks. A lot to unpack from yesterday. Let's start with Melvin Gordon. He is the subject of Broncos country ire this morning. Mace, what do you do with Melvin Gordon?
I mean, it's like in Top Gun a long time ago when Maverick was up in his head after the death of Goose, and, you know, Viper at one point says, keep sending him up. But I don't know, the Broncos they don't have a choice right now, depending on, you know, how long Javonte Williams is out. And, and Mike Boone, you know, he had a drop, and he had a play where he missed a blitz pickup and he allowed a sack. I mean, unless they're going to make a trade at some point, but I mean, but certainly for Thursday night, they're probably going to have to use Melvin Gordon quite a bit and hope that he has some ascension to the mean in terms of his fumble rate. I mean, look, 5 fumbles in 5 games. I mean, that's obviously unacceptable. You have to hope that, okay, maybe he's gotten this out of his system, but they're going to have to rely on him whether they like it or not.
Mace, they got to rely on him whether they like it or not. But what we saw with Albert O yesterday is he had one snap in the entire game, right? And that's Nathaniel Hackett and this offensive staff kind of sending a loud message to Albert O. So if you have to rely on Melvin Gordon, no matter what, like, how do you send him a message that what he's doing is unacceptable no matter what moving forward?
I mean, the thing is, it seemed like they were sending that message at the start of the game, right? Because he was not splitting time with Javonte Williams early. And it was actually Mike Boone who was coming in relief for the first quarter and a half. I mean, to be honest, if you hadn't had that Javonte Williams injury happen when it did, I'm not sure Melvin Gordon would have seen the field the rest of the game. And yet, there you go. He ended up having to go back in and play. So, I mean, I think the thing is, you want to send a message, but at the same time, it's still kind of a next man up type of business. I mean, you could play, you could move Divine Ezigbo up off the practice squad and play him in place of Melvin Gordon, and have him split time with Mike Boone on Thursday and hope for the best. But if you want to send that message long term beyond just doing what you can on Thursday, you're probably going to have to go bring somebody in from the outside at some point to fortify the room, depending on how much time Javonte Williams ends up missing.
Okay, Andrew Mason joined us. And by the way, you were responsible for the Melvin Gordon walk-off. Do we have this? Do we have the exchange? Here it was. So this was Gordon. He did come out. Props to Gordon. Didn't duck the media. Came out to face the music and answered three questions. And then here comes mean old Andrew Mason. Here you go.
You mentioned a couple of days ago that you were doing extra work on ball security on the practice field. So, like, how frustrating is it that, you know, you put the extra work in and it still happens?
And there he goes. Exit, stage left. Mace, it was a fair question. It wasn't a mean question. Were you stunned when he responded that way?
A little bit, but I think in looking at that, I think he probably, like, at that moment, like, he was going through a lot emotionally. I think it was just kind of, whatever it was probably going to kind of push him over kind of the emotional edge a little bit. I mean, the thing I can tell you is that when he talked about the fumbles last week, I mean, he got frustrated and you know, not emotional like that, but he was, you know, definitely, he was definitely emotional, had some edge to him. And then last week in the locker room, when he was talking about the work that he was putting in on the practice field, and Russell Wilson alluded to this a few minutes after that, that he, you know, he could tell, you know, how down he was, and how he was, you know, trying so hard to get out of this. I mean, I think during the game yesterday, I kind of referred to it as like when you're in quicksand, you know, the harder you try to get out of it, the deeper you get. It just kind of feels like that's where Melvin Gordon is. The harder he's working on this, the deeper he's falling. And certainly if you heard Nathaniel Hackett as well a few minutes earlier, like, that doesn't sound like a guy who has confidence in Melvin Gordon right now. So,
Mace, we are four games in. Usually by now we're able to kind of tell what the identity of this football team is. You're around the Broncos. You're at all these practices. You travel to games. You're there week in, week out. What's the identity of this offense?
I think they would like it to be they'd like it to be based around the ground, based around Javonte Williams making plays out of wide zone, and I think they'd like it to be around that setting up the pass. But it seemed like yesterday, and this was even before Javonte Williams' injury, they weren't running the ball well yesterday to start with. That's the thing. It's not like it was just crumbled because Javonte went down. Javonte was struggling too. I mean, it was frankly at times a disaster up front in terms of what was going on and having defenders pouring into the backfield. I don't think they figured out that identity right now, because they're in a moment where if Javonte Williams is out for quite a while, as seems to be expected, they're going to have to figure out an identity beyond running the ball first. Frankly, I think the identity is going to have to be maybe not necessarily what they wanted because they wanted a balanced offense, but it may have to be just putting the ball in Russell's hands and just letting him do his thing. That might be their best shot.
All right, Andrew, good job. Welcome back. Nice. You survived Vegas and live to tell about it. Thanks, pal.
No problem, fellas. Have a great day.
Andrew Mason, who was boots on the ground in Vegas yesterday, joining us thanks to Twin Peaks. Okay, we'll get into what he had to say. And how are we supposed to feel about Russell Wilson's play on a day in which Geno Smith, his replacement, lit it up and allowed smug Pete Carroll to smile? That's next.
You're going to need a bigger boat. It's time for Schlereth and Evans Big Story of the Day.
What? It's just that you're so big.
Here's Schlereth and Evans with this morning's biggest story in Denver sports.
Big mistake. Big. Huge.
So while we watch Russell Wilson take teensy weensy baby steps in improvement, we see Geno Smith go out and put up 48 for Seattle. When 48-45, you will find a long list of Hall of Fame quarterbacks who never did what Geno Smith just did yesterday, and that is win a football game when your team gives up 45 or more points.
Yeah.
And he did. And now you also have the indignity, first of all, of knowing that those obnoxious Seattle fans and obnoxious Seattle media and obnoxious Seattle head coach are all sitting back with smug little grins on their face saying, see, we told you so. Now you got ESPN. You got ESPN this morning posting, through four games, the Geno Smith, Russell Wilson tail the tape. Geno Smith, higher percentage, completion percentage, more yards passing, more touchdowns, and a similar 2-2 record, making a heck of a lot less money than Russell Wilson is.
Yeah, so there's two things you could look at, right? You could look at the aspect that Seattle just understands Geno Smith because he's been there for a while. He's been behind Russell Wilson. They understand his limitations. They understood Russell Wilson's limitations, right? Where Pete Carroll or the book got on him is, hey, he doesn't go left that much, right? So that's a football team that has had guys in that locker room, in that building, that truly have been able to dissect those guys and understand what they need to play and what they have with them week in, week out. Nathaniel Hackett just got Russell Wilson, right? Trying to implement a new offense. Gets up there with the media and says, we do the things that Russ likes. And so are you implementing your offense or is Russell Wilson implementing his offense? I'm hoping that all we've seen is Nathaniel Hackett's offense. I'm hoping that we haven't seen really, you know, the things that Russell Wilson likes. Because if that's the case, it doesn't pass the eye test. Right now, even with Russell Wilson going out there and having some success yesterday and trying and figuring things out, it still does not look great for this offense. So you could look at that aspect of it. But now the problem with it is, Mike, Seattle's not supposed to be winning like this. They're, you know, Pete Carroll, when you made a decision to go away from Russell Wilson, you basically said that you're not going to win these 48-45 games because you want to play tough defense. You want to run the heck out of the football. Geno's not going to throw the ball 30 times and come out of the game with 320 yards and two touchdowns. It's just not going to happen. So now what should like kind of make Broncos country's blood boil is the aspect of you're watching a football team and a coaching staff that truly understands its personnel and its players win the way that they want to win week one against the Broncos, but now win in a completely different way and being able to make adjustments and go win 48-45 against the Detroit Lions, where Nathaniel Hackett hasn't figured it out at all.
So where are we at? Where are we at with Russ? Because he has looked better.
Yeah.
Okay, if you take the last drive of the San Francisco game and you take chunks of what he did yesterday, there was a lot to like. The completion percentage, which had been below 50% against Houston, hovering around 60%, which is the absolute bottom of where you want to be average now, is 60% is what he was against San Francisco. Yesterday, he's back up to 68% completion. Two touchdowns, no picks, taking care of the football, and active running the football. Nice zone read play down the goal line, ran it in for the touchdown, looked to run it in for the touchdown. That was encouraging. Had the big third down scramble as well on that touchdown drive as they were able to get back into the game. But, okay, I'm okay with the baby steps, but at some point, I need a big breakout game.
Okay, so I wanted to tell you
that I can't just be baby stepping my way through this entire season.
But is that necessarily Russell Wilson's fault? Because I'm watching the first half. Russ looks great. He's cooking. I think he was like 11 for 13, 11 for 13 or something like
11
that.
11 for 12, maybe.
11, yeah, 11 for 12. It's spicy. Exactly what he said with the Danger Witch sandwich. And then spicy. I look at the second half where you come out there and all of a sudden the first third down of the second half, they go overload. They put three defenders to the right of Lloyd Cushenberry. They have, you know, a simple game with an ET stunt between, you know, Glasgow's guy and Cam Fleming's guy. Third and four, sack. Get off the field. Is that on Russell Wilson or is that a bad play call by Nathaniel Hackett? Then I look at the next drive right after that, right? Russell throws the ball to Jerry Jeudy. Two things happened on that play. One, I watched Jerry Jeudy go down to his knees, get up, and then run out of bounds, right? Where I just watched CeeDee Lamb on Monday night on the Manning cast catch the ball and run through the defender's chest and say, I'm just more physical than you, that I'm going to go get as much yard as possible. Is that on Russell Wilson or is that on Jerry Jeudy? But what happens on that play as well? Holden, number 72, right? So there is your first two drives in the second quarter.
Second half.
Right? So Russell was out there cooking. He was doing what he was doing. He was finding success. Even though the run game was trying to figure things out, he was being a very reliable option for you and showed you why the Broncos gave him that deal. And now the first two series in the second half, not on him at all.
Well, your first four series of the second half, you had a five-play drive and three and outs.
Yeah, so for time purposes, you know, I didn't want to break it all down. But, look at that, right? We're now, as a defense, you're thinking, okay, they're going to get it going. No, you know, that we're punting. Hey, defense, get back out there. Okay, defense goes
but
out
you
there.
But you can't leave Russell Wilson blameless
in
all of that.
Yes, you can't leave him blameless. But at the same time, you cannot sit there and put it all on him.
No, I'm not doing that. But it's yet a reminder that in a game in which we're somewhat encouraged because he looked a little bit more like himself. We had the big chunk plays in the passing game, 55, 35, 32, and 25-yard pass completions. So we saw signs. Hmm. But yeah, we also saw signs that this is an offense that is still very much a work in progress and is still kind of stuck in the mud.
Yeah.
So how are we as fans supposed to look at where this offense is right now?
Mm.
Because yeah, there was some encouraging signs, but there were also some discouraging signs.
And that's the problem.
How long is this going to take?
And that's the problem because you're seeing the issues from the coaching staff where the scheme, the play calls, they're wrong, they're off. You're seeing guys with the players now. How about the third drive in the second half? Russell goes out there from the one. Melvin Gordon up the middle. No gain. Lucky that we're able to even get across the goal line that it's not a safety. Second and two. Crosby deflects it. Russ catches the ball, has to run out the end zone, like dive to not give up the safety. Now it's third and 10. Russ tries to get it to Melvin Gordon. Little hot, but it's a drop. Now you got Corliss Wademan punting, doesn't even get the full 14 yards, and you're just saying, please get it off, please get it off. You're in panic mode. So it's you got to look at Russ, you got to look at the players that are around him, you got to look at the play calling. Yeah. It's when it rains, it pours, Mike.
Hey, once you decided to treat the preseason the way you did, I immediately went into the long view with this offense. I'm trying to take the long view. Mm. But man. it's hard, especially when we live in a instant reaction world and you're seeing Geno Smith do what he's doing, and you got people around the NFL world, certainly in Seattle, going, ha, 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 boy, did we get put one over on you, you dopes. Mm-hmm. All right. Coming up, what do the Broncos do if Javonte Williams is going to be out for a significant amount of time? We anxiously await the results of that MRI next.
It's Reaction Monday, presented by Superbook.com. Here's Schlereth and Evans.
Think off today, Orlando Franklin's staying in, and he's not going anywhere because he's going to be part of the Players Club coming up here in just a couple of minutes with Nate Jackson and Chad Brown. Chad Brown. So let's get this addressed here. Let's tackle this one head on. Because with the issues of Melvin Gordon, the issues of the Broncos running game, Philip Lindsay's name has been floating around a lot. Philip Lindsay has his fans. Great story, local kid, easy to root for, and doesn't fumble. Not a fumbler. Mm. Never fumbled in his career. How about that?
Yeah, that would be a big upgrade for the Broncos.
622 career carries, no fumbles. So he's on the Indianapolis practice squad right now. Irony of ironies. Of course, even if you did want to sign him off the practice squad, Colts may be looking at with Jonathan Taylor's status very much up in the air for this week with a high ankle sprain, that he may be activated by the Colts and be in a Colts uniform, maybe even playing on Thursday against the Broncos. But make the case for or against Philip Lindsay.
I think this offense is a little complex for Philip Lindsay, just how they operate. You know, when you look at Philip Lindsay, you're not going to have him out there for passing downs. Just not going to hold up. And if a team decides to blitz and they want to, you know, put a linebacker on him and just deliver body blow after body blow on him. But the main thing as far as the offense goes, it's the code words. It's so different where you could have one word that means something, you know, it means this. It means we're going to run, you know, a deep fade route. And we're going to run a 20-yard comeback on that side. And because of how you called the formation, there's two people there to the left. But now you call that same play at a different formation where now there's three people to the left. And now it means completely different routes. So I think it's really hard for guys to come in and play right away in this system. So Philip is already behind the learning curve at that aspect. But also one gap at a time when you look at the outside zone. And when Philip was here, when you ran the ball outside, he had a tendency to kind of outrun his blockers. And this offense fires on all cylinders, and it's at its absolute best when you have a running back who is patient, that could press it to the outside and make it look like you're going outside. But now it's, am I taking the C gap, which that means I'm going straight? Am I taking the B gap? I'm cutting back a little bit. Am I taking the A? I'm cutting back a little bit more. Or am I going all the way back behind the center? And I just have not seen Philip Lindsay's skill set really say that he can do that for this offense that the Broncos are running right now.
And I get everything you said, and it's a great breakdown of maybe probably how other coaches and GMs around the league look at Philip Lindsay. There has to be a reason why a guy who had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons and did not prove to be a liability in the passing game, each season that he went for over 1,000 yards rushing, he had 35 catches in each season, 70 catches total, scored 17 touchdowns during those two seasons. There's got to be a reason why, since those two seasons, the guy has become the definition of a journeyman. Mm. Denver, Houston, Miami.
It was a hometown hero here.
And now
hometown
Indianapolis.
Favorite, where he made the football team, and because of the guys that were in that backfield with him, he showed you that he was the best option.
But as you described everything, again, it makes sense, but I just wonder if that's a case of the league overthinking things.
How so?
Well, because, okay, maybe he doesn't always hit the right gap, the right hole. Maybe he is a bit of a liability at times in blitz pickup, but the things that he does do.
Okay, so
run hard, not fumble.
Okay, let's
not be a liability in the past. All right, go ahead. You want to tackle each one?
Yeah, right, let's talk scheme.
Okay.
All right, okay. Power scheme. Does Philip Lindsay fit a power scheme running in between the tackles where you're going to probably do that 15 times a game? Probably not. You know, if you're a GM, if you're an offensive coordinator, you're probably going to try to go away from that saying, I don't know how this guy's body's going to hold up doing this play after play. And like it or not, Philip Lindsay has been a very healthy person. So I think he has kind of changed that narrative, and he should have, where GMs should look at him differently. But when you just look at the body type and you look at the fact that, okay, you know what? Where has he had his success? He's had his success by going outside. Okay, now let's look at the wide zone scheme. If we put him in that scheme, well, we know that there is not patience. It's give me the ball. I'm going to go try to get what I could get as fast as possible. With this offense for the Denver Broncos, it's all about reading it out, getting explosives to force them to put a safety in the box. When you force them to play, put a safety in the box, now that's when the play action passing game and you get your explosive in the passing game happen. If Philip Lindsay's going to go out there and he's going to kind of outrun his blocking and you could see it on film, GMs are going to have a bad taste in their mouth. The offensive coordinators are going to have a bad taste in their mouth as well. With the Broncos, there is no doubt what Philip Lindsay did was absolutely amazing. But he also showed you immediately that he's the best option in that running back room against the guys that have been drafted over him. And when he went out there, he protected the football. He ran hard, showed that he could be durable. And the Broncos said, the heck with this. We have a 1,000-yard guy in this. We're going to force feed it. We're going to give him the ball. It doesn't matter the situation. We're going to continue to give him the ball. So I think Philip Lindsay benefited from signing with the Broncos, the fact that he was able to beat out the guys that were in that room, the fact that he's from Colorado and had success where now he was able to, you know, take steps and take bigger steps where other teams said, the heck with that. We're not just mortgaging our future on that. We've seen that you are able to run through the tackles, but can we really count on that? You know, our eyes tell us, our eyes and our mind tell us differently because of how small your body type is and the type of guys that are trying to tackle you play in and play out.
Well, it's clear the NFL has their view of Philip Lindsay, and the fans here have their view, and they believe, hey, give him a shot and bring him back and he'll produce for you, but what's inescapable is the fact that the NFL is sending a message when it comes to Philip Lindsay. If they, you know, you think about a guy, for all the things that are said well about Philip Lindsay, you would think that why would an NFL team not love to have that guy as, you know, one of their featured backs and be able to use him in a way in which smaller running backs get used around the NFL, Austin Eckler, Miles Sanders types. But at some point, you just have to just look at the message being sent by the NFL. And the fact is that since 2020, he's been with Denver. He's been with Houston. He's been with Miami. Now he's with Indy on their practice squad. Four different teams.
Yeah.
The NFL's sending a message in regards to Philip Lindsay. Now, you may not agree with it as a fan of Philip Lindsay, but
they've made up their mind.
The NFL seems to have made up their mind on this guy.
Yeah.
Now, you could say you're right and the NFL's wrong. Okay, and you can feel strongly about that. I'm not telling you not to feel the way you feel, but, man, it's hard to ignore the message that the NFL is sending when it comes to Philip Lindsay.
When you're a general manager and you see Philip Lindsay have the success that he had in Denver, knowing that, hey, he's a guy that kind of outruns his block and will kind of get to the edge, is not patient behind the line of scrimmage, and now you see him go to these other teams and not have success, they just trust the opinion of other people. And this fan base, yes, there's a lot of fans of Philip Lindsay. Heck, I am a fan of Philip Lindsay. I would love it if Philip Lindsay was here 2 weeks ago, and I'd be, you know, elated that he's going to get some playing time on Thursday night and see what he could do. But the NFL has sent the message. GMs have passed up on Philip Lindsay. They have said that he's a little bit too small. They have said that they don't trust him running in between the tackles. And, oh, by the way, Philip Lindsay has shown you that he's probably not the best option at blitz pickup. He's probably not the best option at coming out the backfield and catching balls as well. I know he had 70 over 2 years, but there were some drops that came as well. He could have had a lot more. So you got to look at the film, and you got to look at the fact that GMs have made up their mind when it comes to Philip Lindsay in the National Football
League. Well, he definitely has his fans, though. Definitely this texter who just said, well, Barry Sanders was small, too. Look what he was able to do. Philip Lindsay could do the same if given the chance. Okay.
Not getting the chance.
We got somebody being comparing Philip Lindsay to Barry Sanders. Okay. Okay. Time now for your injury report presented by Zoom Care. We wait and hold our breath to see the MRIs for both Javonte Williams and Randy Gregory. The Gregory injury does not seem to be too severe, as all the indications coming from Gregory yesterday was it wasn't too severe. Still, we wait. But with Javonte Williams, early returns are that this is a significant knee injury, and he's going to be out for an extended amount of time. Of course, I'll say what we're all thinking. Will it be an ACL? And that's the fear.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not. You don't want to see this guy's season. And especially, I truly believe the Broncos haven't used him the right way. And was pounding on the table, hoping at some point that they would figure it out. I was never a part of the crew saying the Broncos are a Super Bowl team. I just wanted them to punch their ticket to the postseason. And if Javonte Williams can't go because it, in fact, is an ACL, I think your postseason hopes have just went completely away.
Okay, we will wait to see what happens there. Big, big MRI that we await the results of. Your injury report presented by Zoom Care. Visit ZoomCare.com to learn more about their Beyond Better urgent and primary healthcare clinics in Denver and Boulder today. Oh, thank you very much. We'll do it again tomorrow. Right now, he's not going anywhere. He's joined by Nate and Chad, the Players Club, next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.